Early in the morning, rise into the street. Light me up that cigarette, and I strap shoes on my feet. Got to find a reason, reason things went wrong. Got to find a reason why my money's all gone. I got a Dalmatian, I can still get high. I can play the guitar like on.
I like that music. I can hear it and going on and on. It's a pretty great climate in Dallas outside, and I wanted to go out and have a walk after the show. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Bride to HR, the number one daily internet radio show for the HR professionals, where Brian Vinton, Bolin Tinkup, and Nisha coming to you live every day talking to our wonderful guests. And we have a wonderful person, Kevin Sheridan. Hey, Kevin, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Nisha. Just had a wonderful hike out in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, in advance of this interview, and very excited to be with you.
Well, we are so glad to have you here.
Thank you so much.
So, Kevin, do our audience a favor. Would you please introduce yourselves to our audience?
Sure. My name is Kevin Sheridan. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've started three different HR-related companies. The last one was called HR Solutions, and what we did was we specialized in helping organizations build a magnetic culture, which actually wound up being the title of my New York Times bestseller, Building a Magnetic Culture. And by building a culture that's magnetic, you're focused on building true employee engagement, where the employees are never going to think of leaving the organization. They won't leave at the drop of a hat. And by having a culture that acts like a magnet, it literally draws top talent into the organization. And one of the biggest and most costly downsides of a culture of disengagement is turnover, which costs the American economy $300 billion each year. So when I wrote the book, I really wanted it to be a playbook, if you will, for not only organizations, not only managers, but also employees themselves, because the ownership for engagement does not rest in one place. It should be in multiple places, and not the least of which is you can't have employee engagement without the employee. That would be the ultimate oxymoron.
Well, congratulations for your new book, Building a Magnetic Culture. And I'm so pretty much pumped up to read that book right now. And Kevin, we have our normal format, like we normally ask, what's keeping you up at night, or what's keeping your clients up at night? So as I assume now you have recently launched your new book, this employee engagement and dealing with your clients and helping them engage their employees would be the topic that's keeping you up at night, right?
Yes, absolutely. I was thrilled to sell my company, and ironically, since I've sold it, there's frankly nothing that's keeping me up at night. however, with that said, I know a lot of people in the HR community, all the way up to CEOs of organizations, that are having trouble falling asleep and waking up in the middle of the night, centered on a couple of concerns, not the least of which is retention, and that costly turnover that happens with cultures that aren't engaging to employees. And then in this area of finding top-notch employees, attracting top talent as well is very important as well. And Nisha, the report card on how well recruiters and hiring organizations are doing for new employees, the report card is frankly awful. If you look at the turnover statistics within a year of a new hire, of all new employees that are hired by all major industries, literally 59% of those employees are gone within a year. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that there isn't a scrutinizing interview process on both sides, on both the employee candidate side as well as the employer, the hiring recruiter, there's not enough analysis and scrutiny of whether it's the correct match. And I think one of the biggest contributors to the middle of the pie chart of engagement, which is literally 60% of workers worldwide are not engaged and they're not disengaged. They're ambivalent. They approach their job with kind of a time to make the donuts mentality. And I think the single greatest reason for that is they're in the wrong job. There are literally hundreds of millions of people that go to work every day with this lack of passion and lack of vigor because, as Jim Collins said so well in Good to Great, they're in the wrong seat on the bus. Now, smart recruiters will actually vet through candidates very carefully to make sure that they're putting someone in a job that that person can become passionate about. They're putting someone in a job where they can see vividly the meaningfulness and purpose that Dan Pink talks about in his great book, Drive. And so I think one touch point for hiring recruiters as well as managers is that they need to be much more careful about who they're letting in to their magnetic culture.
Cool. That's such a great insight, Kevin. And I must say, yeah, employers better understood that there's no brainer that hire for the culture fit to have an engaged workforce. So what are your tips? What are your advice to our audiences for recruiting? You know, that's the foundation for creating that magnetic culture, as you're saying, right?
Exactly. Well, first, I think the first step or first best practice that I would advise is companies is just to be more scrutinizing, be picky, if you will, as part of the hiring process. Now, the other thing that can be done is while you're interviewing candidates, you can look to see whether in their resume or in what they share with you, do you see evidence that this candidate has a predisposition to be engaged? Have they been engaged in the past? And our definition of engagement is threefold. Likelihood to stay, willingness to exert extra discretionary effort. And if you don't see evidence that they've been volunteering for extra activities, then that would be a warning sign. And then lastly, do they see the manager as being the sole owner of engagement, or do they accept responsibility to some degree that they are also responsible for their own engagement? Are they willingness to accept responsibility or ownership for engagement, or are they going to be the type of employee that will lean back and say, well, if you do this company or if you do this manager, then I'll become engaged? That's not healthy, and any healthy relationship should indeed be a two-way street. So that's the second piece of advice. Look for that predisposition to be engaged. The third is something that I learned the hard way. When I ran my company, at some point in time, we had a turnover problem as well, and it was driving me crazy, and it was costing me dearly. And I finally called my management team in the room, and I said, this has got to stop. We had, as people were coming in and out of the organization, it's just sheer disruption. There were quality issues. And I said to my management team, enough is enough. I'm tired of looking in the rearview mirror and saying, oh, you know what? I had a feeling when I interviewed him, there was something I saw or I remember, I just didn't feel entirely right. Well, listen to your gut. If you have that hesitance, if you will, or you see something that's a disturbing sign during the interview process, don't accept it. So I said to my management team, I said, I'm going to brand this new method. I'm going to call it our non-negotiable list. And I want each of you as leaders of this company to contribute two things to the non-negotiable list. And I'll start today. I am going to add, if I see that someone cannot look me in the eye during an interview process, I got problems with that. We're not going to make the offer if they can't look you in the eye. To me, it's a possible trust issue. It's not direct and candid. And the second thing I'll add to the list is if somebody cannot succinctly and clearly answer a question, I don't want to work with them. And it was amazing, Nisha. We curbed our turnover by 80% within 6 months of using that non-negotiable list. One other thing that I'll add that shockingly people are still not doing is do the background check. find out what's their history in terms of the background check. Do they have a criminal history? Is there an arrest or a DWI? Now, what we would do is we'd not only do the background check, we'd actually allow the candidate, when they sign the release form, we'd say, by the way, if there's anything that is going to show up on this, we'd like to know now. And if they weren't honest and candid, and indeed the report came back with a red flag, we wouldn't hire them because it was a signal that they should have been open about.
Well, that's interesting, Kevin. And as you said, I have this thought in my mind while hiring this candidate. We cannot totally rely on the resume, but we need to ask more and more questions to really understand that employee or that candidate was previously responsible or engaged in his prior or previous assignments. So that asking more questions and knowing the engagement level from that employee, which you haven't dealt with, you just met him on that day, and it's just a 5 to 10 minutes conversation. So how do you judge that? How do you judge that candidate was previously engaged? And from that aspect, the environment in his previous company and his company that he's going to join would be totally different, right?
Yes, exactly. There are two other things that I think would be helpful to your listeners as well that were on the non-negotiable list. That if somebody brought negativity to the interview process, like they literally spent, if you ask them why they were leaving their current employer and they started bad-mouthing the employer, bad-mouthing mm-hmm. their manager, that's frankly, it's not professional and it's a red flag. It's a sign that that person is a gossiper. And there is a direct correlation between gossip in the workplace and the amount of disengagement. So that's another best practice. I'm going to share a story with you that's in the book, Nisha, that gets to mm-hmm. the heart of what your question is about. And again, it was a lesson learned hard by me when I was leading this company that specialized in employee opinion surveys and teaching companies how to receive feedback. I had one department that was a really troubled department. It had what I'll call three water cooler malcontents. Gallup calls them vampires. Three of the actively disengaged employees that were going out of their way to create trouble and spread rumors and what have you. Their manager was not very effective. I called him Coffee Cup Dave because Coffee Cup Dave, his approach to management was to buy coffee for his employees and be their friends. And thus, there was no accountability. I finally got rid of all four of those people, and some of them left with the door open, just transitioned out. Some of them were terminated. But the bottom line was, I said to myself, when I hire for this new position, I need somebody that I can trust. I need somebody that isn't perfect in their own eyes. And by the way, the Society for Human Resource Management did a study asking all the CHROs, the head of human resource people, what's the number one reason that these new employees don't work out? 43% of them came back and said, number one reason people don't work out, they cannot take feedback. You try to give them feedback and they get defensive about it. So what I did, Nisha, was I interviewed 10 people for Coffee Cups Dave's position. And the first 9 of them, I let all 10 get comfortable for about a half an hour, and then I asked a real zinger behavioral question that gets to the heart of, can this person take feedback, or will they get defensive? I said to each candidate, can you share with me what's the single greatest mistake you've made in your job in the last 3 years? And Nisha, the first 9 people answered the question one of two ways. They either brought up a mistake and promptly blamed someone else for it, or they sat hemming and hawing on the couch in my office. They just, for the life of them, could not think of anything that they've done wrong in the last 3 years. That is a red flag. The 10th candidate, Meredith, she came in. I barely got the question out of my mouth, and she said, that'll be easy. We really messed this one up. And she went on to articulate exactly what went wrong, what measures she put in place to ensure it could never happen again, and what she personally learned from the experience. She had the job on the spot. I knew by her answer that she could take feedback. She could admit she's not perfect. She's open to change. She can be candid, and I can trust her. Meredith, you got the job. And that story is in the book.
Cool. That's interesting. And I totally agree with you, because the managers, they have to learn by example, and they have a great role in creating an engagement culture, and that's really imperative. So, but for building that trust factor, which is really crucial thing, right, which doesn't happen in a day or two.
Well, exactly, and that's, you know, what's in the book. I had the benefit of having a great statistician on my staff that would look at all these surveys that millions of people filled out about their job, and I asked this gentleman, I said, I want you to rank order the drivers of engagement. Show me with great science and statistical validity what are the drivers of engagement. Well, the top three are recognition, number one, which is huge. There's an enormous amount of the workers out there that feel incredibly underappreciated. They're not hearing the attaboy. They're not hearing the attagirl. They don't feel like they're recognized, frankly. And the second one is career development. And the third, which touches upon your point, is the immediate supervisor. And Nisha, the old adage mm-hmm. that people don't leave companies, they leave managers, could never be more true. So how do you get that type of relationship where you get an employee that says, you know what, I'm working for somebody that really cares about me, that I can trust. And a lot of the advice I give in the bestseller is to those managers, how they can establish a relationship where the employee feels that they're getting guidance, they're getting support, that the manager's in their corner vis-a-vis their career development, that they have a quarter meeting with each of their direct reports and say, hey, Nisha, where do you want to be 6 months from now? How can I help you? What a beautiful sentence for a manager to say to the direct reports. And also what I call to get personal, and I mean professionally personal. The number of managers that are out there, quote-unquote managing, that do not take the time to ask what the employee does outside of work, that apparently is indifferent. The manager is indifferent to the interests and hobbies of the employee. And I just think it's an enormous missed opportunity. I think good managers and great leaders take the time to get to know people on a personal level, to get people to know people, know where their kids go to school, what their hobbies are. Oh, you're into yoga. Neat. My wife teaches yoga. Those managers that take the time, they're really sending the direct and indirect message that they truly care about the person as a human being, as opposed to looking at employees as pawns on a chessboard of productivity, if you will.
Cool, that's interesting. I'm going to do a quick refit, everybody. We are talking to our wonderful guest, Kevin Sheridan, and he's the author of his new book, Building a Magnetic Culture. Just check it out. I just tweeted it out in our Twitter stream, Drive to HR. So, Kevin, I really like that personal, creating that personal connection with the employees. And as you said, it's really true that, you know, more than your work and more than your daily, day-to-day job, it's all about people, and it's all about creating that personal connect with the person that you're working with together. But as we can know, every job has its high and low points, right? So, but then how do we measure the engagement? We know that person, he's putting his effort in terms of bringing everything together, but then when people are meeting their low points, and how are they managing their low points? Would that be considered as an engagement factor, or how do you measure engagement during their low points?
Well, it starts with measurement, and the old adage that you can't manage it if you're not measuring it is very true in this case. Needless to say, as the former owner of a company that did employee surveys and competed with great firms like, you know, Modern Survey and the Heat Group or what have you, I'm a big believer in the surveys. But I would also be constructively critical that a lot of the surveys out there are out of date. They're antiquated. They haven't been updated in years, and they're missing, in some cases, key drivers by demographic. So, for example, if an organization is trying to engage the millennial employee, the younger worker, and they're not asking certain questions like questions about corporate social responsibility, where millennials, they want to be working at an organization that cares about its community, that is environmental and green, then they're missing that. Most of the surveys out there do not have a core question focused on that driver for millennials. So you want to make sure that the instrument you use is pretty abbreviated, but is indeed asking about questions that matter on engagement. Then ultimately, you want your provider, whoever you choose, to provide you a pie chart, not only at the global level, and the pie chart is created by the questions that are being asked on the most impactful ways to drive engagement. So in our survey at my old company, we had two questions focused on recognition, one that was more cultural at a corporate level and one that was specific to the immediate supervisor. We had questions as to whether people thought they were paid fairly, which is a driver. Historically, people said it wasn't, but in this economy, it absolutely is. Compensation has to be fair, and it has to be just. And I also, by the way, Nisha, bring up the shameful disparity in my book, the shameful disparity between, to this day, in 2013, women still are making less for men in the same than men in the same job. And I think that's awful, and it needs to be corrected. So ultimately, when you measure it, your provider should give you a pie chart which shows you how many actively engaged people there are. Nationally, it's 27%. How many ambivalent people, that's 60% with the time to make the donuts attitude. They're not passionate about their job, and they're not prideful about where they work. And then, thankfully, the last third of the pie chart is only 13%. That's your water cooler malcontent, the vampire, as Gallup calls them, the workplace terrorist, if you will. All of those names are entirely accurate. These are people that are seeking to spread a cancer-like disengagement throughout the organization. Here's my advice to your question. Where do you focus on your pie chart? Where are you going to get the biggest bang for your effort and your dollar? It's not going to be the water cooler malcontent. In fact, most management gurus from Drucker to Welsh would say, get those people out. They are a cancer. And that is what I agree with as well. I used to spend so much time coaching and hoping, and I can still see the faces of my actively disengaged former employees where I'm at risk as an entrepreneur. I'm a natural optimist. So I would coach, and I'd like, oh, she left my office. I think she got it this time. And literally within days, I'd see the same negative outcome. I am of the belief that you either coach up or you coach out. So my advice is not to focus on the actively disengaged other than getting them out of the organization. Your big win or your quick payback occurs in the middle category of ambivalence. How do you reengage them? Well, I brought up volunteerism before, and I addressed this in the book. Those managers out there that are wondering about their own pie chart, you can kind of create it in your mind, sit back and be reflective and say, who are my A players? Who's in the middle and who's the water cooler malcontent? It's nice if you have a measurement tool and you can actually see that pie chart for your group driven off of how they responded to survey data. But even without it, you know your middle of the road players. You can identify them in the next staff meeting. Ask for volunteers. Say something like, hey, we got a really fun initiative we're going to be doing. Who wants to volunteer? Your ambivalent people will literally hide behind a pillar or dive under the conference room table. They are not ready to volunteer, so maybe they need to be voluntold. Nisha, you're on the committee. Congratulations. We expect great things. That's one way to reengage them. The other thing is just to talk to them about engagement on a regular basis, and definitely in performance reviews. Ask questions like, hey, Nisha, when you're most excited in your job, when you're absolutely passionate about coming to work every day, what got you there? What's your magnet, your personal magnet, and how can I help? Hey, Nisha, is there anything that's kind of bugging you, anything that's disengaging you, and maybe we can recalibrate there? I'll be honest with you. When I ask managers, thousands of them, have you had such a dialogue about engagement? only 5% of them say, you know what, I have done that. I regularly do that. It is a huge quick win for managers out there. Reengage that ambivalent population. The other thing you can do is let the positivity of your engaged people spread like a wonderful, infectious piece of fun in the organization. How do you do that? Get one of your A-player engaged people to be a mentor for an ambivalent employee. It works. The positivity spreads off. The engagement spreads off, and it pays enormous dividends.
I like that idea, because reinforcing or re-engaging employees using the A-players. And you know what? One question that is, you know, educating employees on what they can gain from improving their engagement level is often a missing piece of the talent management puzzle. I just read from your chapter one of your book. I was just going through it. Can you please describe more about it, why it is important for organizations to educate their employees on what they can gain from improving their engagement level?
Absolutely. Well, what they can gain is they can have more fun at work, to be honest with you. And if you look at any key driver on analysis on engagement, you're not going to see fun because these survey companies aren't asking about it. I know definitively from working with some of these awesome places that were best in class on engagement, they all inspired fun into the workplace. They also showed employees what engagement looked like. So if the healthcare worker, for example, could see what does engagement mean, as if I'm a nurse in the ICU, how can I aspire to be an engaged employee? Do I show compassion? Do I show up to work on time? Am I aware of infection control? Which, by the way, engagement can save lives in healthcare. We did a study years ago proving there's a direct correlation between engagement and hand-washing compliance. And sad to say that in America, you are 5 times more likely to die of a hospital-borne infection than you are a homicide, because healthcare workers, some of them, are not washing their hands, and they're the ones that are not engaged. So show them what engagement looks like, and then you might encourage them to be reflective. And I actually created a list of 20 statements that every 3 weeks, Nisha, I check in with myself, and I read these questions. I check in with myself about my job to see, do I need to recalibrate? Am I still feeling the passion and the love for my job? These questions might be as simple as, did I have fun this week at work? Did I do my best? What could I have done better? Is there something that's disengaging me? And have I talked to my manager about it? If any of your listeners would want a copy of that list, I'm happy to share it with you. I can give my contact information at the end of the interview.
Sure. Well, Kevin, well, thank you so much for being with us today. And we had a great show. And thank you so much for all your great insights about employee engagement. We have about 1 minute left right now. And I would like to hear, where can people connect with you or come and find you? What are your plans?
Absolutely. They can find my website at kevinsheridanllc.com. There's information about a lot of the research that I've done, my bio, my media kit. I do a lot of public speaking as well. Those people that would want access to resources would want to contact me directly. My email address is kevin@kevinsheridan, that's SHERIDANLLC.com. And in case anyone wants to talk to me live, my phone number is 847-386-7486.
Cool. There you have it, everybody. And have a wonderful rest of the day, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.